Welcome to this session of Parallel Times. I'm here today with Liam Davis, the co-founder of Genesis Homesteads. Liam, welcome, and thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Excited.
It's really great to see you, and I know it's been a minute. We've been trying to coordinate our schedules to get together, so I'm really excited that we've found this time that's going to work. So in the next little while, we're going to be learning about Genesis Homesteads and what the business does. It's very innovative business. And first, I'm going to start by just explaining how Liam and I met. So it was at the Replatform Conference in Las Vegas this February. And Replatform is a conference that brings together innovative businesses that are looking to create, if you will, parallel society with a new economy, a sovereign economy. And so, Liam, just because that's where we started and where our communication started, can you tell me what made you decide to attend that conference and how that fits in with your business?
I think it was seeing how many like-minded other businesses and companies were taking part in it. You talk a lot about the parallel economy, parallel culture, and seeing people that were aligned with the work that we're doing and wanting to basically communicate what we're doing to everybody, and then also see all the other panel speakers. And it was a really amazing event, made so many connections. Honestly, the value of it was connections for us and just networking with people.
Yeah, totally. And Liam was a co-presenter, and that was when I learned about Genesis Homesteads, actually. So a little bit on why I'm interested in Genesis Homesteads. My partner, Chris, and I are now creating a homestead at the Operation Self-Reliance community in Utah. And so I went to speak with Liam about the possibility of him doing some consulting with us at our property. And actually, we will be working with Genesis Homesteads to get some input. And we'll talk as we go in terms of what Genesis Homesteads does, about what kind of input we will be getting. We're currently gathering our information so that Genesis can give us the best help that, that we can give them the most information to give us the best help. So why don't we start with you giving us an overview of what Genesis Homesteads is in terms of the type of work you do and who your clients typically are. And also, if you can tell us about your lovely co-founder and partner.
Yeah, so Genesis Homesteads is a homestead design firm. And what that means is we were looking around at all these different families who are acquiring land, wanting to join in the parallel culture, the parallel economy, and seeing that oftentimes there'd be 5 to 10 years of trial and error as they would get their land up and running, wanting to build a self-sufficient homestead. So we came up with a system that can be used for any climate, any piece of land, and we use this to design homesteads, creating phase maps from inception to producing food to off-grid energy all the way to completed homestead. And we work with families with any size of land or living situation. Even if somebody listening is in an apartment and they just want to have a consultation about how to produce all their own food, all the way up to having a 10,000 acre ranch, we kind of do it all because of our diverse background. We integrate permaculture, rotational grazing, like I said, off-grid energy, and as many sort of cutting edge, but also traditional techniques as we can into the designs.
That's wonderful. And your partner is your wife.
Yes. She is a powerhouse because her background is not only in graphic design and art, but also she would rotationally graze beef cattle. So she's about 5'5" and weighs 120 pounds, but she, it really speaks to how the systems that we use are as low effort and accessible as possible, because she was able to produce 80,000 pounds of grass-fed cattle a year, almost on her own, with some assistance from the other farmhands. So she does the drawings. Actually, you can kind of see, not mirrored right now, but you can kind of see one of our designs in the background, and also on our website at genesishomesteads.com. And that's her lovely work. She hand draws all of it. And she's really, you know, she takes a lot of the theory and ideas that I have and that we talk about and brings them to life. So couldn't do it without her.
Great. And your website is genesishomesteads.com, as you see under Liam's name on the screen. And we're just popping up the website here for a second, but we hope you'll go explore. There's actually a little bit of an initial assessment that people can fill out, right? So that they can submit to you what it is that what their gig is, what they need. And, you know, if they're interested in talking to you about the possibility of working with you, to schedule a brief consult to see if that might be a match, which is what Chris and I did. So that's super helpful.
Yep. Yeah, that can definitely just speed things up a lot. And we try to have as many useful questions as we can in there. So
that's great. So this is a funny question because, you know, both you and I are working with this homestead concept now, and we're kind of living, eating, breathing homestead. But a lot of people have asked me, what do you mean by homestead? I really have no idea what you're talking about. So can you, I mean, we're in our modern culture, we've come so far away from that concept. Can you give us a little definition of what a homestead is?
Yeah, it's sort of reclaiming an older term, which homesteads were really the norm for much of history, of people just living on a couple of acres. You know, across the world right now, actually, a lot of people are still living like this, producing the majority of the food that they consume, living multi-generationally. So you have, you know, maybe grandparents, great-grandparents, all the way down to little kids. And I guess another term could be family compounds. But there is a huge movement right now with, you know, all the craziness that went down with the lockdowns, with people questioning, you know, am I even going to be able to eat meat in 5 years? And we've kind of been given this dichotomy of like, you can live in the city, or you, if you're affluent, you can live in the suburbs. But nature, that's sort of off limits, or that's crazy. You know, if you're hardcore and you want to go be a Yellowstone rancher, maybe you could do that. But in reality, you know, most people lived this way 150 years ago, just on a couple of acres with their family, producing their food and making it work in the day to day. And I think it's presented in media purposefully as sort of like a slog, or you're never going to be able to do anything else. You're never going to be able to make art or have a job where you do something else. But, you know, it takes a village. Like, we're meant to do these things together, which is also where my company comes in, and, you know, resources like Parallel Times as well. And everybody that's contributing to this movement to be able to make homesteading accessible to people who are not necessarily coming from a farming background or coming from a homesteading background. So.
Great. Thank you. And I love what you said at the beginning, that this is scalable, that it doesn't mean you're going to go out and become a rancher full time as a business. And folks who listen to my work have heard me talking a lot about Breanne Burnson, who I am doing a live online course with. And Breanne raises all of the food. Well, she raises the food that she uses also to trade to get the rest of their food, but she raises 3,000 pounds of food a year on less than a tenth of an acre. And I had the opportunity to visit there in May, and it's just incredible. And she does that while she's homeschooling six kids. So she spends about 4 hours a week in the garden. That's it. Something like 2 to 4. And she's got this incredible system while she's supporting her husband's surveying business. They're both surveyors, raising the six kids, doing the garden, and making a lot of their food products as well, their bread, their fermented products. So, you know, yes, Breanne's a phenomenon, and it's also, people can do these things. It doesn't have to take up the whole life to raise the food. That's kind of a bill of goods that we've been sold. If you have a good system and a good design, that makes all the difference. So before we get into what that means, a good design, and what Genesis Homesteads is doing to help create a good design, What's your background that led you into going into this work?
I don't personally come from a farming background or even a landscape design background. Neither does my wife. And we both grew up in Massachusetts and kind of just, you know, in the school system and in public school and all of that. But I had a providential experience in 2016, about 8 years ago at this point, where I had a loss in the family that led to some of my family members moving out to Washington State. And the providence of it was that this location that they moved to was actually a mile away from one of the oldest permaculture farms in the Northern Hemisphere. The people who live there actually learned directly from Bill Mollison, who is the creator of permaculture. And just quickly, permaculture is it's a little self-explanatory. It's a design system for how can you create a permanent culture? Because right now in our culture, we're exhausting all of the soils. You know, birth rates are declining. Cancer, chronic disease, it's increasing every single day. So it's how can we, instead of designing a system to be as extractive as possible or as manipulative as possible of energy, to create a system that is self-sustaining, truly sustainable, not just in a buzzword sense, a permanent culture. So I was able to go and live and study at that farm. It's a 10-acre homestead that supports three families. And like you said, you know, you can produce all of this food on a tenth of an acre in such a small space. So it was amazing seeing 10 acres of every single little nook and cranny being maximized. And when I went onto that property, it was sort of like walking out of a dream or like walking into reality. And I was like, I can't believe that there's this system that can produce all the food that we need and nobody's really aware of it. And I'm driving around and seeing all these soy fields, these corn fields, massive suburban housing developments going up, and I'm not really seeing this solution being implemented on a mass scale. There are some examples like Village Homes in Davis, California, some other housing developments and things like that, but that's really woke me up at the time and got me interested in fruit production, nut production, vegetable production, how to integrate every single aspect of food production and energy production into where you live and into that homestead setting. And then, you know, while all of this was going on, my wife was rotationally grazing cattle back in Massachusetts. And then we later met in university when I went back to study regenerative agriculture. And she had also gone to do that program. So yeah, I've said it, but you know, it was just God's providence that it sort of all came together to expose us to this information. And ever since then, we've just been obsessed with proliferating this knowledge and helping families to reclaim the knowledge and the birthright that has been lost in the last couple of generations.
That's wonderful. And it's always nice to know why people do what they do, because it makes all the difference. Like this is really a passion for you. This is your gift to the world to help people reclaim this knowledge. And as you say, walk out of the fantasy and into the reality of what's possible. I'm curious where you were in Massachusetts. Where are you from? What school you went to?
I'm from north of Boston. My wife is from the Cape, Cape Cod. And just a hyper populated, hyper liberal area, but still very beautiful. And that actually really influenced my upbringing as well, and my love for nature. That sort of inclined me to get into farming was all the forests and everything in New England, and growing up and experiencing that. So,
I went to graduate school in Massachusetts and lived there for about 7 years, I guess. So, and spent time on the Cape growing up. So, it's that's an area that's near and dear to me. Two. And then what about the title Genesis Homesteads? I'm sure that was chosen with great thought and care.
Yeah, that comes from Genesis 1:26 in the Bible, which references how God created man in his image and then gave man dominion over the earth. And I was really looking at, you know, just thinking about that passage and looking at the world and thinking, we're given this false dichotomy of we can either exploit the earth, we're either going to destroy the earth by taking part in farming or taking part in building homes or things like that, or we're going to conserve everything. We're going to put everything into conservation easements. We're just going to have huge state and national parks. And I'm very thankful that there are these resources, you know, beautiful national parks in America and everything. But more and more of this land is being bought up by multinational corporations, private equity equity firms like BlackRock, and realizing from that passage, Genesis 1:26, that really God wants us to have a participatory relationship to nature that actually makes it more productive than it would be if we left it alone. So we can use natural systems, we can use natural design through things like rotational grazing and permaculture and some off-grid energy production methods to actually make nature more productive than if we were, you know, all in 15-minute smart cities, leaving it all to be conserved by the federal government. So that was really an eye-opening experience for my wife and I, is to think of it that way. And then we were like, well, you know, Genesis also building these homesteads, it oftentimes it's sort of in the image of the Garden of Eden, or returning to how can we acknowledge that there's something wrong going on, repent and get out of this fallen state and embody the beauty of creation more and the beauty of God's creation that he's bequeathed us with. So all of those concepts kind of came together, and then we were like, yeah, it just has to be Genesis homesteads.
Cool. So I'm sure, you know, we have folks with a lot of spiritual backgrounds watching this program, and certainly, you know, Parallel Times honors everybody's choices and spiritual background. And personally, I'm coming to believe that the most real things, because there's a lot out there that's not real anymore, are whatever spirit, higher power, God, however you identify, nature, and the love that humans have amongst us. And those, for me, are the guiding lights. And that if we can connect more and more to nature, we can become more and more real again. Kind of like, it's suddenly reminding me of that old, I don't know if you knew this book growing up, but The Velveteen Rabbit, and the Velveteen Rabbit wants to become real, wants to become a real rabbit. And I think that, you know, how can we become real creatures, real human beings? And part of that is about having our hands in the soil, whether it's a little pot of herbs that's sitting on your windowsill, or whether it's a 10,000 acre ranch, or, you know, anywhere in between, that's part of how we become real again, like the Velveteen Rabbit.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And from our faith background as Christians, it's how can we become more of in the image that God made us in? But this is accessible to everybody. We work with everybody from all backgrounds. And it's really having access to these eternal forces, you know, beauty, love, truth, integrity, these things that are really under attack from the powers that be, I guess I could say. So you know, like you said, it's a life's work, and it's truly a blessing to be able to help people really empower themselves with this information and to see people have access to this flourishing that really is a birthright as humans.
Great. Thank you. So can you, just to ground this, because we're kind of being philosophical and conceptual, which is always fun, but can you ground this for us in a recent example of a project you've done? Of course, whatever you need to do to maintain privacy, but an example of a type of project and why the people might have come to you and what their needs were and how you were able to help them with your design.
Yeah, many of the parcels that are available nowadays as land becomes more and more of a sort of, just it becomes more and more valuable every day, more of a valuable resource. Many families that we work with are purchasing heavily wooded lots. And then it's sort of up to you, how do you take this forest without damaging it or causing massive erosion or damaging the topsoil, modifying it so that it's able to support a garden, support your home and all these things. So we have had a couple of clients recently across mostly the southern United States who had these heavily wooded lots, and we were able to work with them to discuss how can we even adjust the population of trees over time and focus on sustainably managing it as a food and resource, food and production resource for everything from goats to mushrooms to firewood, just sustainable forestry, while also how can you clear some of this land to create pasture, to create gardens, to create a home site without causing that erosion that we often associate with removing trees. So that's been a really great kind of aspect of some recent projects, because before we were mainly focused in Texas for a couple of months, and it was just a lot of pasture and a lot of already cleared land. And so it was just a great design challenge to work with.
And you're based in Texas, correct?
We're actually in the process of re-moving back to New England to be closer to family. So that's actually been very exciting too, because it's really in our bones, you know, the beautiful autumns and everything here and the climate and everything. So we're excited for that, this next chapter, but we also have great love for Texas. And we were in East Texas in the Piney Woods, and it was beautiful there as well.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mention about people having land and needing to manage their trees, because just, I don't know what it was, less 16 hours ago, I was talking to a friend who has a small farm up in Canada, actually, and they had to take out a number of trees for fire protection and, you know, other protection. You know, there's always this thing about managing the trees that are near the home so that they don't jeopardize the home. And then they took out the trees, and now they've got an erosion management issue and making sure that the foundation doesn't get damaged now with water moving through that didn't before the tree roots, when the tree roots were there. So it's interesting that, I mean, where I'm going, which is Operation Self-Reliance, we have no trees, which is funny because I'm a tree lover. I hope we will soon have trees. I mean, people have planted some fruit trees now, but I would imagine it runs the gamut from helping people who have homesteads in the high desert to helping people that have homesteads in areas that are highly forested, and the whole end of the spectrum that has to do with creating that permaculture environment where the people and the plants and the animals can peacefully coexist in harmony for long or into perpetuity in a safe way. So it sounds like you work with all of that with Genesis Homesteads.
Yeah, we've worked as far south as Florida, actually, and as far north as Montana, across that wide range of ecosystems, bioregions. And there's an element of, okay, well, we're working with too much heat, too much humidity, too much water, too many trees, to then going to, well, now how do we fit food production into maybe a 4-month window on a lot that has no trees at all, and capturing some of that water and utilizing as much as we can. So it's definitely a blast, you know, being American with such a wide variety of climates across America. So.
Yeah. So I'll tell a little more of our story in terms of why we wanted to work with Genesis Homesteads. And maybe this will set the stage for the types of factors that Genesis Homesteads considers. So for those who haven't heard what we're doing, Operation Self-Reliance is kind of in the middle of nowhere in Utah, or at least the first location. There's a second location that's being planned for Arizona, and there will be additional locations later. But it's a 250 homestead property on 1,100 acres in an area that used to be an alfalfa farm, a commercial alfalfa farm. And each family or household buys a share because it's an agricultural collaborative. And that is roughly 2 acres, two and a half acre piece of property that we don't own the land, we own the share, and that gives us the right to utilize that share basically in perpetuity, 99 years, and then there's extensions so we can sell it, bequeath it, do whatever we need to do with it. And on that property, we will put a home, a barn, a greenhouse, a garden, a well. And we got our septic permit on Monday, which is a huge deal.
Nice.
Yeah, big deal. Chris has been out there slonging it out in the 108 degree heat. So, and that environment runs the gamut from very hot and very dry in the summer to very cold and very snowy in the winter. And so the goal of Operation Self-Reliance, as the name implies, is that we become self-sufficient as a community with interaction with other communities, but that we are raising a majority of our food, and also that we have some cottage industry that relates to our small mini ranching that we're doing that we can sell within our community and also sell to the broader community, which would be the closest town, Nephi or Salt Lake City even. And so Chris and I wanted to work with Genesis Homesteads to make sure that we were considering everything that should be considered, like given the fact that we are not going to be full-time ranchers because we have other things we do, how can we produce a crop that's going to be saleable in that economic environment with the distance we have to go, with the time that we have, with the microclimate factors that are there, the winds that are there? How can we design our buildings to optimize the use of our natural elements and minimize the possible damage of our natural elements and do all that in a contextually appropriate, time appropriate way that respects the environment and also maximizes what we want to eat? So we wanted to work with Genesis Homesteads to make sure that we weren't forgetting anything, including the zoning, the regulations. I'm just looking at my little list, all the microclimate factors, size, soil, sun, rain, wind, temperatures. So those are some of the factors we're looking at. So kind of maybe building on that example, can you talk, Liam, of all the different kinds of factors that you consider when you're consulting?
Definitely. And it really is an amazing project that y'all are doing out in Utah. And at the same time, you know, kind of as you go over it, it really shows all of the particulars that are there as you're developing the homestead and as you're looking at, you know, this huge undertaking that's ahead of you. It's sort of how do you prioritize and how do you do things in steps so that what you do, you know, three years down the road doesn't cause you to have to take out what you did in the first month or you know, damage that overall vision that you're really going for. So when we're designing a homestead or doing a consultation, what we do first is look at the most permanent factors in the landscape. So that is the environmental factors like rainfall, what is the shape of the land. These are things that are very difficult to modify, but if you put the systems in place to utilize the sun, the wind, the rainfall, the natural shape of the land right away, that can have incredibly positive ramifications pretty much perpetually going into the future, 5-10 years from now, all the way generations down the road. Because alternatively, if we look at, let's say we purchased 100 acres and just made it a cornfield, you're taking out all of the natural ecosystems, including the tree roots and the topsoil and everything that's holding that water in place. So alternatively, when we're looking at a homestead, water is obviously so important because water gives life. So we're looking at how do we put in sort of as little change as possible, but with the greatest effect. Ponds, what's called key line design, swales, fruit trees, nut trees on contour to build soil and to capture the water as it runs off the land over the contour of the land, allow it to sink more effectively into the land and reach roots more deeply, which definitely in the instance of the high desert, it's crucial to do that because, you know, a desert will actually get enough rain to sustain life. But the issue is that it's a hard pan usually, or just completely compacted soil where the water is quickly running off or it's passing immediately through the soil. So it's really, how do we capture that water in place? And then from there, we start looking at how do we position the house? How do we position gardens, et cetera, et cetera, to take advantage of little microclimates from the sunlight, from the wind, et cetera, et cetera. All the way down, going from the scale of permanence from these environmental factors all the way down to, you know, the home, the driveway, and then the least permanent actually being the soil because of how fragile the bacterial life is in the soil. So when we take care of these higher order things, the lower order things are able to fall into place more effectively. I hope that made sense. So.
Yeah, I'm eating it up with a stick and a spoon. And I'm not a student of permaculture. I don't have formal training in permaculture, but I actually co-wrote a book called The Home Farming Revolution for Drylands with a person who is an expert in permaculture. And I was like, you know, again, I think from childhood about the stories of the city mouse and the country mouse. I was like the city mouse that the country mouse was teaching. And so I learned a bunch of permaculture concepts from her, and in the process of writing that book for somebody who knows nothing like I did. So one of the principles I understand of permaculture is really being on the land and observing what happens on that piece of land before you start imposing your ideas on it. And so it's ironic, but I keep deferring with Liam and saying, soon we'll start working, because I want to actually be out there more before and get data. Chris is out there now, has been, as I mentioned, putting in our septic system, and he's finding things from the neighbors like, well, the neighbors that positioned the greenhouse in this way have been successful because the winds that move through from the southeast and the northwest have created natural ventilation through the greenhouse, and they've had less bug problems in the greenhouse. Whereas the people who positioned their greenhouse in this way have had all these bug infestation problems because they're not utilizing the natural flow of the winds. So we're starting to get that wisdom from our neighbors, but I feel like once we're out there, we will get more of that wisdom before we put permanent design in place. And we have the luxury of doing that because we're going to put a manufactured house temporarily on the property and be able to observe more and then start creating the design for our permanent property. So as you say, 3 years down the road, I'm sure there's going to be some of that woulda, coulda, shoulda, because you don't, can't avoid it. But hopefully we minimize that, and also with your help. So we've talked about this a little bit already, but is there anything more you want to say about why you think this work is so important at this time in the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. And I spoke a little bit on it earlier about the importance of things like beauty and love and also land being purchased by these multinational corporations. But it really comes down to preparing the world for future generations, for people to live in sovereignty, in connection to their birthright, which is to be human and to nurture your soul and to nurture your family and all of that. And a huge component of that is eating a pesticide GMO free diet away from, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8G towers in the city. And it's especially true now that the UN and other organizations are starting to crack down on meat consumption, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I love cold showers for the health benefits, but, you know, maybe there will come a time where we're compelled to have to take cold showers. And it's really getting back to the land, but then also going into it with these modern understandings and sensibilities about new technologies that exist, so that, you know, we don't have to live completely without. We can still have hot water and warmth and use technology sensibly, but we don't have to sacrifice our humanity in doing so. And so I think, the time is now. There's a saying that the best time to plant a fruit tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today. And land is only going to become more scarce, and freedoms will only be more infringed upon as things kind of come to a head and accelerate. So we think that this is incredibly important work that everybody is doing, and we just feel once again blessed to be a part of it.
Thank you. And how do you think that creating, a mini ranch or a homestead helps people leave the matrix or create parallel society as you conceive of it or you understand it?
Yeah, you kind of actually touched on it a little bit earlier when we were talking about the elements of the design, talking about how you were one, going onto the land and observing it, and then two, communicating with your neighbors and seeing what had they observed? What were they aware of? And you're creating this system where you're transacting between each other information, food, other resources like medicine. And if we think about literally the movie The Matrix, it's our energies being harvested by something that is not human, that is actually sort of a technological force run amok. From a Christian perspective, I could call it the Antichrist. Just the darkness, basically. So it's taking our energy back from that system of being harvested on a grid. And this is why, off-grid really goes hand in hand with the homesteading, is because getting off that grid and creating a parallel grid, a divergent grid economy, where it's people who have the culture that, we as human beings want to uphold, as opposed to being beholden to this AI sort of unconscious consumption lifestyle. So yeah, I think it about covers it. So
that's great. Thank you very much. That ties a lot together on a lot of different levels. So appreciate your insight. So I don't know if we've missed anything that you feel is important. I want to, if there's anything else you'd like to share about your work or anything else related to what we've discussed? I'm just looking at my little cheat sheet here of what to make sure to ask you. So anything else that's important that you think people should know about your work or their opportunities or whatever?
Let's see. I think we covered most of my notes as well. And if anyone is interested in a free intro call just to talk back and forth about your situation, feel free to visit our website, genesishomesteads.com, and you can fill out that form and we'll be in touch quickly. You can also DM us on Instagram at Genesis Homesteads. And some resources that I might recommend if people are interested in permaculture or producing animal foods regeneratively and restoratively, I recommend Gaia's Garden by Toby Hemenway and You Can Farm by Joel Salatin, both just really influential figures. And both of those books have had a huge impact on me. And just thank you for the opportunity, Melanie. It's great.
Thanks so much. And I'm really looking forward to working with you, which is going to be coming right up. And I will be telling people how that goes, what our experience is, so that you can have a little insight into what you could do yourself, whether you work with Genesis Homesteads or you don't, but, in terms of how this can unfold and how much help there is out there for people who want to do something like this. You don't have to know everything. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to do things perfectly. Just stumble forward imperfectly and the help you need will show up. So definitely encourage people to start where you are with what you have, do what you can, and just keep going.
Exactly. Yeah. All the information is out there and we're going to be making an effort to ramp up our sort of educational content as well, because there is a lot of information to sift through, but there's many, many nuggets of gold. And we're really excited to work with you as well, Melanie, in the near future.
Good. Because I'm going to be pinging you real soon about doing a little intro course. So great. Well, thank you so much, Liam, and appreciate your time and good luck with your transition move. And we'll be in touch very soon.
Absolutely.